Shoshana, we have the practice to eat simanim. We eat all kinds of different food items that enhance our table on Rosh Hashanah. And where exactly does this practice come from, and what is it all about? So we begin with the source for the practice, which is the Gemara in Horius Daf Yud Beis. The Gemara tells us, this is the first entry on the source sheet, the Gemara says in Horius Daf Yud Beis what would seem to be a very surprising statement. Amar Avami, Hayman Debay Leida. And I would imagine, the Gemara says here, somebody who wants to know, Imasik Shasya Olo. Somebody who wants to know whether or not they're going to make it through the coming year. Now, I would imagine all of us probably wouldn't mind knowing the answer to that question. And I've never found anyone who knows the right answer to that question, but the Gemara here gives us a formula to find out the answer. So listen to this. What should you do? Nitli Shraga, you should hang up a candle. Ba'asara Yomi Debein Rosh Hashanah Liyom HaKippurim, you should hang up a candle in the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Bebesa delo nashav zika, make sure it's in a case or it's in a home where there's no wind, where the wind is not going to blow it out. Imashech nahore, if the candle burns all the way down till there's no wax left, then you know neida demasik shasi. Then you know that this year you're going to make it through the year, the same way the candle made it all the way through and didn't burn out early. I can tell you there are all kinds of shadows that come up during the year on all kinds of levels, but I think one of the most prominent shadows that we get, which I don't think is that important, but it's something that people, for some reason, get very bent out of shape about, is when I have yahrzeit and I lit the candle and it didn't burn till the end, what do I do with the rest of the wax? So the answer is either you burn it or you don't. That's, you know. But here the Gemara tells us that there's a formula. If you want to know what should be with the coming year, whether or not you're going to make it through, the Gemara says you should hang up this candle. And if it burns all the way down till the end, that means one is going to be fortunate enough to make it through the year. And if not, it means bad things are going to happen. Says the Gemara further, Man debay lemeved beiska. Somebody's about to get involved in a particular business venture. Ubay lemeida imatzlich ilo matzlich. And he wants to know whether or not it is going to be successful. I would imagine everybody wants to know that. The Gemara tells us this formula as well. Lirbi tarnagola. You should buy a particular chicken, a hen, and you should watch it. Ishamin, if it becomes fatter, if it becomes fuller, then that means matzliach. Then it means your business venture is going to be successful. And if not, the Gemara says it won't. Somebody who wants to go on a trip. And back in the days of the Chazal, in the days of the Gemara, when you went on a trip, it was a very dangerous kind of venture. You didn't just go out for no reason. And you want to know whether or not you're going to return back to your house, whether or not you're going to have a successful trip. So the Gemara also gives a formula for that, that you should go to somebody's house and see if you see your reflection and the reflections of the reflections and the shadows. And then you're going to know whether or not you're going to come back alive or whether or not your trip is going to be successful. And the Gemara comments on that last one, V'lav milsahi. That's not a good idea. Dilma chol shadayte umisra mazle. Maybe you're not going to do the experiment properly and then the whole trip you're going to be spending worrying about what you thought you saw and what you didn't see and what you think you're going to see. And it's just not a good idea. And the question is, does that mean all of these are not a good idea? Or does it mean just this last one is not a good idea? So that's a major point of discussion. The Rishonim actually debated there on the Gemara. The Meiris have the opinion, no, you're not allowed to do any of these. All of these are narishkeit, all these are bad ideas. And the only thing that it's going to do for you is it's going to put crazy ideas in your head. It's going to make you nervous. It's going to make you anxious. And who needs that? That's not going to help anything. That's not going to successfully get you home. It's not going to successfully work out your business venture. And therefore, the Meiris have the opinion that here, this line in the Gemara teaches us that none of this is a good idea. Okay. However, the Gemara then continues and says, Amar Abaye, Hashta diyamrit simna milsahi. Now that you're telling me that we have all these formulas to figure out whether or not something is going to be successful, and you're telling me that there's real meaning behind the formula, and there's real meaning behind the sign that you see, Yehe ragil lemechzi berei shata, a person should accustom themselves on Rosh Hashanah to eat, or to see, the Gemara says, a kra, ruvya, karsi, vasilka, vatamri, which means all the different food items that we eat nowadays on Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara here tells us that this is something that we should be doing. Because if we believe, if we assume that there's some kind of message behind all these different formulas that the Gemara gives us, then there's a message as well on Rosh Hashanah if you will sit there and take different food items that have some kind of secondary message behind their name or behind what they represent. That's what the Gemara says. And this is also mentioned in Krisus Andavav, the very same Gemara. Yehi ragil inish lemechel rei shata. A person should eat on Rosh Hashanah krav, eruvia, karti, silka, v'tamri. A person should eat all these different things, which somehow are a siman that you're going to have a good year. Now, this is something I believe is the practice universally. It's the practice all over the world. Ashkenazim and Svardim, I think everybody has this practice. Hasidim, Misnagdim, everybody does it. And the Shulchan Aruch actually discusses it. And the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Look at number Gimel. This is in Hilchas Rosh Hashanah. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Yehe Adam Ragil Lechol B'Rosh Hashanah. A person should accustom themselves, based on this Gemara that we just read, a person should accustom themselves on Rosh Hashanah to eat Ruvia, Dehainu, Tiltan, Karti, Vesilka, Vetamri, Ukra. You should eat all these different things, gourds and different food items. Ukshayochal, Ruvia, when you eat this food item, you should say, Hiratzon Sheyirbu Schuyosenu. When you eat the Karsi, when you eat the leeks, you should say, Yikarsu Sonenu. Our, just like it's called, it's a play on the words, just like it's called Karsi, which means to cut, but that really means leeks in Hebrew. So we play on the words and we say, Yikarsu Sonenu, that our enemy should be cut, should be knocked off, should be extinguished. Silka yistalku oivenu, tamri yitamu sonenu, kra yikra gzardinenu. We have all these different ideas. Now the Rama adds on and he says that we also have the practice to eat a tapuach bidvash, and we say l'shana tova umasuka, and that is just a comment to keep in mind if you want a nice Dvar Torah to say at the table. Don't tell your husbands that I told you, but it's a nice vart. Rav Asher Weiss pointed out to me this week that he always wondered, why is it that we say l'shana tova umasuka? Why do we wish people a double language? You should have a sweet and a good year. It's the same thing. So he pointed out to me this week that perhaps the understanding in that bracha is that a person should have a shana tova umasuka because not everything that's good in life is always so sweet, and not everything that's so sweet in life is always so good. So we wish for somebody that they should have not only a shana tova, not only that everything that happens to them should be for the good, but also that that good should be sweet for you as well. Not everything that's so good is always so sweet. Not everything that's so sweet is always so good. I think it's a very profound blessing when you think about it, and it's something we should all think very carefully about and wish with a whole heart to others that they should have the very same kind of year, which is not only tova, but also mesuka. Not only mesuka, but also a shana tova. So that's based on the Rama, that we eat an apple dipped in honey, that we should have a nice, happy, and sweet year. And then the Shulchan Aruch has that we should eat a rimon as well, we should eat a pomegranate, all these different kinds of food items. One last point that the Rama writes in the last line of this statement here is, v'yesh medaktigim, and there are those who are careful, shalo lechol egozim, that they do not eat nuts. And everybody calls every year, what kind of nuts does it mean? Does it also mean peanut butter? Does it mean walnuts and almonds and everything? Everyone has all kinds of things that bother them about this. I remember I asked my father last year about pine nuts, and those, he said, for sure don't get into this discussion because those are not nuts. So anyway, the reason why we don't eat them is because, number one, the Shulchan Aruch says, egos is begematria chet. To say we have all these different simanim of items that we do eat in order to be a simen tov, in order to be a good omen, so do we say that an ego should not be eaten because egos is begematria chet. My father always points out every year when we learn together, he always says, egos is begematria chet, and that's why we don't eat it, but chet is also begematria chet. If you do an aver on Rosh Hashanah, it's worse than eating the nuts. So a person should be very careful to abstain from violating averus on Rosh Hashanah. And I believe when you think about that comment, it's not really a joke. It's a really important comment because the Chida points out that we have a concept in halacha called ein kateger nasa saneger, which means you don't want the defendant to be serving as the prosecutor. They cannot be the same thing. And the Gemara uses that in the context of halacha. The Chida points out that on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, when the highlight of everything we do is we use our mouths, we want that God should listen to our prayers, we want that God should listen to all the tefillos, to all the things that we need, make sure that your mouth is not going to be the defendant and the prosecutor. You're using your mouth because you want God, you want to petition Him with your mouth, and you want to supplicate yourself and offer so much to Him. Make sure that that mouth is not speaking Lashon Hara, is not getting angry at our spouses, is not getting angry at our children, is not getting frustrated that the menu is not the way it's supposed to be and the table is not set the way it should and why are we not finished with shul yet. We have to be very careful on Rosh Hashanah, certainly throughout the year, but on Rosh Hashanah it's something to be very, very concerned about, that that very mouth that we are offering all of our tefillos with, we should be careful that that is not going to the saneger. It has to be also something that is on the level that God should actually accept our tefillos with the mouth that we are going to use. I think it's a very important halacha to be aware of. I think it's something that's not a joke at all, as much as it's a play on what the Rama says, but it's something that we should be extremely careful about. And Rosh Hashanah is not a time for our midos, our instinctive ways of reacting should come out. It's a time that we should try and hold ourselves back, and we should try and be on our absolute best behavior. Now, the Magen Avraham adds that not only should we have all of these different food items that are mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, but the Magen Avraham says that we have the right to add on what we consider in the vernacular to be also some kind of siman tov. So, for example, you have everybody in their own family comes up with their own simanim, and that the Magen Avraham says is perfectly okay. That's something that's acceptable. It's something that everybody has the right to do. If there's something that you feel will enhance your Rosh Hashanah and you have some sort of siman that goes along with it, you're allowed to do that, and there's nothing strange about doing that at all. It should be pointed out that when you eat the simanim, the achronim write, since when you wash for the meal on Rosh Hashanah, generally we assume when a person washes for a meal, the hamotzi lechem in haaretz covers everything that the meal is going to serve. However, when you eat these kinds of things that are superimposed into the meal, they're not really a course in the meal, it's just something as an add-on just because it's Rosh Hashanah, the hamotzi lechem in haaretz does not cover those items. And therefore, we have the practice that when we eat all the different simanim on Rosh Hashanah, again, if you're eating a fish, that's part of the meal. But if you're eating something that's not a part of the meal, let's say you put the rimonim into the salad, you put some pomegranate seeds into the salad, that's part of the meal. But if you're having it as a separate part of the meal and not really in the context of the meal, then a bori pri ha'etz should be made before eating those items. We'll get to the brachos a little bit later, but that's something to keep in mind. And since you have to make your own bracha, you also have to keep in mind the order of when brachos are supposed to be made. So if you have, let's say, a rimon on the table and an apple, even though we know the highlight of Rosh Hashanah is the apple dipped in honey, but a rimon is from the Shivas Haminim. So you're supposed to make the Bori Pri Ha'etz on the pomegranate, and then that covers also the apple that you're going to eat later on. So this is something you have to consider before Rosh Hashanah when you put everything together and you plan out your meal. You should think about which items you have and which items you're going to be eating and what bracha you're going to make. So these are very seemingly strange activities that we do on Rosh Hashanah. This is very unusual that we have all these kind of simanim. And some achronim suggest that perhaps the reason behind, the symbolism behind what we do is based on a Ramban. The Ramban writes in Chumash a very fascinating concept. Let's read the Ramban together in number Dalet. We're going to skip the one in number Hey, but you can read it on your own. It's the same idea. The Ramban has it in a few places, but we're going to read the one in number Dalet. The Ramban says as follows, Vida, a person should be aware, a person should know. And here he's not talking at all about Rosh Hashanah, he's just talking in general. The Ramban lays out a principle in Hashkafa that he believes in. And he says, Kol Gzeiros Irin. Irin means Shamayim. Any gzera, any decree that comes from Shamayim, that comes from heaven, kasher teitze mikoach hagzera el poel hadimyon, when you take that idea, when you take that gzera that's percolating, so to speak, in Shamayim, let's say, God is now figuring out, does Shechter deserve to have life or does Shechter not deserve to have life? And this is a major question, and this is an idea that's floating around in heaven, and they're figuring out whether or not the answer should be yes or the answer should be no. Says the Ramban, when you're going to take a gzeira min hashamayim, when you're going to take some sort of idea that's floating around, so to speak, in heaven, and you now materialize that and put it into a poel dimyon, you take that imagination, you take that fantasy, and you put it into an activity, you make it into a fulfillment, tia hagzeira miskayemes al kalpanim. Now God cannot take it back. Once it's been put into action, once it's been put into materialization, it cannot be taken back. Vilachain. And therefore he argues that there was a Navi that Yirmiyahu HaNavi gave a Nevuah one time. At one point Yirmiyahu told the Jewish people that Babel is going to be destroyed and they're going to sink into the ocean. They're going to be forgotten in the history books. No one's going to remember about Babel anymore. So the Navi Yirmiyahu told the Jewish people at the time that they should take a book, they should take a heavy book, tie heavy rocks onto it, and throw the rock and the book into the ocean and watch how it sinks all the way down into the ocean. And he said, that's exactly what's going to happen to Bavel. Why did Yirmiyahu HaNavi have to do that? Did he think nobody was going to believe him when he said in Nevuah that Bavel is going to be destroyed? What was the significance of doing that act, of taking the heavy book and tying the rocks and throwing it into the ocean? Says the Ramban, the reason why is because once he materialized his thoughts, once he put it into an action and he made everybody throw the book into the river, now there's no taking it back. Now God is going to follow through with that. And now God is actually going to sink Babel and destroy the entire community. So therefore, the Ramban argues that this is a principle that we find in many different places, that when there's a idea that's percolating in heaven and we're deciding, I mean, God in his heavenly tribunal is deciding whether or not it should be happening or it should not be happening. The Ramban says sometimes when you make that into an action and you do something physical, that will actually sway the decision, and that will make it actually happen. That's what the Ramban writes. And based on that, there are those who suggest that that is what we do on Rosh Hashanah as well. There are all kinds of things that we want on Rosh Hashanah. We want Sheyitamu Soneinu. We want that all of our enemies who ruthlessly come after us and who have brutally murdered so many of our people, we want that they should see their end, that they should no longer be here. And that's why we concretize those thoughts and those feelings and those ideas that are flying around in heaven or ideas that we're all thinking about at this time, and we concretize it into the action that we do on Rosh Hashanah night. It's based on this comment of the Ramban. Some suggest that that's why we do what we do on Rosh Hashanah. The Ben Ish Chai comments that if anyone's a Sfardi, you'll know very well what I'm describing. But if you ever watch the Sfardi Davin, when they get up to Poseach HaSedecha, they open their hands. So the Ben Ish Chai comments that that's not a joke. That's something that makes a lot of sense. It's based on the Ramban. Because also, you want that God should open up his hands. So we do an action, we open up our hands, and that will make God do the very same. So again, this is an idea that we find in other contexts as well. But this is basically the idea behind this minhag, this practice that we have to eat the simanim on Leil Rosh Hashanah. The question is, do you only eat it on the first night of Rosh Hashanah? Do you eat it on both nights of Rosh Hashanah? Now, those who suggest you should do all these simanim throughout the period of Aseret Yemei Tshuva, whatever you do is wonderful. All different minhagim, they're all fine. But basically, the point of all this is that we try and concretize the thoughts and the feelings that both we have and the thoughts and the feelings, so to speak, that are going around in heaven about us as well. And we try and materialize all of those thoughts, and we want God to spring them into action the same way we are doing on our world. So that's the basic premise of the simanim that we do. Now, the problem with all this is that it would seem to be a biblical violation of the Isser of Nichush. The Isser of Nichush means for a person to be involved in incantation, for a person to be involved in all kinds of superstition and necromancy, and that's basically the question, do we have a right to do this, or should we assume that this is a biblical violation of the Isser of Nichush? So let's look at the Gemara's description of what falls under the category of the violation of Nichush. Says the Gemara as follows, Tana Rabbanan, second side of the page. Tana Rabbanan, Menachesh, doesn't mean you're getting it out early, just because we're almost done. Tana Rabbanan, Menachesh, what does it mean to be a Menachesh, to be somebody who's involved in Nichush? Zeh ha'omer pito naflo mipiv. That's somebody who says, oh, the bread fell out of my mouth. It means I'm not going to take another bite because then I'm going to choke on it. Or whatever. You have all these kinds of signs that you make up in your own mind that make sense, which really, scientifically, don't make any sense. Or maklo naflo miyado. I'm walking down the street. All of a sudden, my walking stick falls out of my hand. I say, you know what? I'm going home. Forget it. It means simon, sign from heaven that I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And you forget about what you were about to do. Or bino korelo me'achorav, or orev korelo, or tzvi hivsiko baderach, you have an animal runs in front of you, or nachash mi'imino, you have a snake runs by you, or you have a shul mi'smolo, you have a wolf is walking by, a fox walks by you on the other side, or you say, al taskel bi, I don't want you to start with me. They're giving out some sort of prize or something, you say, no, don't start with me, it's a bad simon, it's a bad thing, I don't want you to do it. Or you say, Shachrasu, I don't want to do a business deal, it's too early in the morning. Or I don't want to do the business deal because it's not Rosh Chodesh. Or it's Matzah Shabbos, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. The Gemara says all of that is considered Nichush. That is an Isser D'Oraisa of Nichush. We are not allowed to be involved in such things. And that is something that the Gemara describes as the biblical violation of Nichush. Now you know that this is a major problem in our generation. It's a major problem in our generation because we know that we have all kinds of things that we have come up with in our times that people, for some reason, have decided make sense. And my father, when I used to learn with him, my father, I still continue to learn with him, but he told me when we were discussing some of these issues that his understanding is the reason why Nichush is so antithetical to everything we believe in is because everything about the Jewish religion has to make sense. We believe in a religion that is methodical, that is scientific. We believe in a religion that is intelligent, that's rational. And we don't do things that don't make sense. My father told me so many times that Rav Soloveitchik used to spend so much energy and so much of his time explaining the minhagim, trying to really get to the bottom, to explain, to understand all the minhagim that we do throughout the year. Because if a minhag doesn't make sense, we don't keep it. You have to understand why we do minhagim. We don't just do minhagim because of some strange reason. We do a minhag because there's some very rich significance behind the minhagim that we keep. Rabbeinu Tam writes in one of his svarim that when you think about the osios minhag, minhag is mem, nun, hey, gimel. He says if you flip it around, it's osios gehenim. Rabbeinu Tam suggests, Rabbeinu Tam was one of the gedolei harishonim. Rabbeinu Tam suggests because if a person keeps a minhag that doesn't make sense, that doesn't have any context and reality, that will not lead a person toward doing the right thing. That's leading a person directly into gehenim. That's not at all what our religion stands for. And the reason for that is because our religion is a very rational religion. We believe everything has to make sense, everything is logical, everything is reasonable. My father always says over that when he was in college, there was someone in his class, in a philosophy class, who had a dictionary that had a lot of cartoons in it about philosophy. So he said he remembers that when they came to the word arithmetic in the dictionary, there was a cartoon in there of a priest who was showing his students what does arithmetic mean in their religion. So he writes on the blackboard, 1 + 1 = 3. Anybody got that? So it's not that funny, I guess. So my father always pointed out that in other religions, perhaps, that's not a kasha. Nobody's bothered by that 1 + 1 = 3. But in our religion, we do believe in asking questions, and we believe that everything has to make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, we try very hard to make sense out of it. And if we can't make sense out of it, perhaps we will do away with a particular minhag which doesn't have any meaning, which doesn't have any significance. And this is why nichush is something that is so against everything we believe in. You'll be surprised. But the Tosefta Maseches Shabbos, when it discusses all of these violations of nichush and different examples, the example that's given in the Tosefta is somebody who wears a red string around a part of their body. And that's very surprising, because that's something that so many thousands of years later is something that so many of us do. And we believe, what's going to happen if the red string rips? What am I going to do? And what's going to be with me? That's going to be the end of me. And this is something that the Tosefta writes very explicitly is part of the violation of, is part of the violation of nichush. I know that very often nowadays we have people who go, when a couple gets engaged, they decide that, you know, it's not good enough that they dated and it's not good enough that everything else matches up, but they have to go to a mekubal to check out the names and make sure that everything fits. Now this is something that is very against our tradition. It's not what we believe in. We believe that tamim tia im Hashem alokecha. We believe that we're supposed to live life normally. We don't live life in these wild kinds of ways, and this is something that we don't believe in at all. I remember I was at a wedding, and my father always very responsibly brings along the invitation to the wedding in order that if he hears a mistake in the ksuba, if he hears that the name is off, he'll check it up and make sure that everything's right. So I remember we were at a wedding together, and you know, when everybody else is talking while they read the ksuba, my father's listening. So he was listening, and he heard that there's something wrong, that the name was not exactly the way he saw it on the invitation. So he pulled it out, and he shows it to me. He says, is that what they just said? I frankly was not listening, so I said, I don't know. So we went over afterward, and he checked it out, and he asked the girl's father, how come your daughter's name was different on the ksuba than it was on the invitation? He said, what do you mean? We changed it at the Badekin. So my father said, why did you change it at the Badekin? So he said, and Mekubal called us late in the afternoon, right before the wedding, and said, the Shidduch is not going to work out because his name, her name, and everything, the grandparents, the great-grandparents, and everything, you have to change the name. My father was so opposed to it, and he said, that is exactly the violation of Nichush. We don't believe in living life in such a way. We don't believe, there's no significance to that at all. It's not the religion that we ascribe to, and it's not something that we should be running after. We have a Torah that teaches us what we should be careful about, what we should not be careful about, what's important and what's not. And to go ahead and change names and to do different things like that is highly inappropriate. I once heard Rabbi Yaakov Hillel speak. I only heard him speak once in my life. But Rabbi Yaakov Hillel is a, I don't know if people know him or not, but he's a incredibly well-respected Talmud Chacham and Mekubal in Eretz Yisrael. However, although he is a Mekubal on his own, he wrote a book called Faith and Folly, which is his disapproval of those who practice Kabbalah the way we know today. You know, you run to a Mekubal and they tell you all kinds of crazy things about yourself, and they tell you should be doing all, you know, different kinds of ideas, and wearing this belt and that belt, you can't get pregnant, so wear, you know, I don't know, they have all these kinds of ideas. So Rabbi Yaakov Hillel wrote a whole book where he disputes all the way that they try and encourage people to live. So he made a comment on that point when I heard him speak. He made a comment that we give a child a bracha when they're born, kishem shenichnas lebris kein ikanas l'torah l'chupa l'masim tov. So he said, obviously the simple understanding is the same way you made it to this milestone, you should make it throughout the other milestones in life as well. But Rabbi Yaakov Hillel commented that he thinks also maybe it means kishem. The same name that you were given at your bris is the name you should also have at your chuppah. It's the name you should have when you die. You shouldn't start going around and running around to try to switch names and mazalos and to figure out whether it's right or it's wrong, and your parents gave you the right name or the wrong name, and it's going to be a good shidduch. It's not going to be a good shidduch, because it's not the way we're supposed to be leading our lives. It's not the way that we believe. The Rama writes in Siman Kufayin and Tes here, the Rama says in Yaradeya, after all the descriptions that he gives of the Isra of Nichush, he says, Haholech betom, Yelech betach, somebody who walks and lives life bitmimus, with just trusting and believing in God and believing that everything he sends you is for the good, Yelech betach, you will be much more secure than somebody else who tries to run around and do all the skulas and all the wild things, because that's not the way we're supposed to be living life. My father writes a story from Rav Soloveitchik that there was a boy in the shir. I don't know if you've ever noticed at a wedding, some boys undo their ties and walk around with shoes that are untied. So before I got married, I just thought that when my mother told me not to do it, it's like, because you look like a shlump. That's what I thought. So I was scared for my life, so I didn't do it. But little did I know that my father had written about it. I found later, my father didn't tell me, but he had written about it, that somebody once asked Rav Soloveitchik that he was marrying a girl, and the girl's mother, his mother-in-law, had told him that when it comes to the wedding, you have to untie the ties, you have to untie her shoes. And he asked Rav Soloveitchik, like, what's the story with this practice? Where does it come from? So Rav Soloveitchik said he had asked his father. He had asked his father as well. And his father had asked his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was an extremely well-respected person. And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said, we shouldn't do this. Then Rav Soloveitchik came back to the boy later and he said, no, Rav Chaim didn't say we shouldn't do it. He said, you're not allowed to do it, because that's not what we believe in. That's an Isser of Nichuz. You believe that if your tie is going to be tied, then the marriage is going to be in knots. So what exactly do we believe? What's the significance of this? And therefore he said, you shouldn't be doing this. The boy then came back to him and he said, well, the Shviger, you know, my mother-in-law is really upset. She's adamant that this is what we have to do at the wedding. So he said, look, never fight with the Shviger. That's the bottom line. But he said, you should do it for your mother-in-law. It's not worth a fight. However, he said, you should have in mind when you're doing it that this means nothing, and it is nothing, and the only reason I'm doing it is because I don't want to fight with my mother-in-law. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said. And again, we have so many examples of this. And the question is, why do we take this so seriously? You had a question?
About the name changing. How does that apply to adding a name when somebody's sick?
So when somebody's sick, we have a concept that we add a name. What's that all about? When somebody is sick, well, first of all, a lot of people have a misunderstanding of when the name is supposed to be added. Some people, unfortunately, have a situation where they have someone who's sick, and there is no chance that anything will turn around. No, obviously, things can always turn around, but there's no natural, understandable chance, medical reason why anything should turn around. And then they go ahead, oh, let's do the last resort, let's change the name, you know, a day before the person passes away. That's not when the name is supposed to be added. The name is supposed to be added before you get to that point, because when a person is on a downward spiral and we assume they have bad mazel, so then we change the name because we assume that that's Mishana mazel, because we say that person no longer exists who had that terrible mazel, and now we have a new person that came into the world with this new name, maybe the mazel will be a little bit different. That's when you have somebody who clearly has a bad mazel and we're trying to get them out of that mazel. But just to say, when you have a happy young lady and a happy young man who are getting married and there's nothing strange about what's happening, and all of a sudden we're going to get up and say, no, the names don't match up and therefore we have to change this and change that, it's not based on reality. It's not based on anything. There's no mazel issue. There's no anything. And therefore, that's something we should stay far away from. Now, why is there such an insistence that a person should not be involved in nichush? Why do we assume that this is such a horrible thing to do? To the point that the Psukim tell us, and the Sifri points it out, that one of the reasons why we got Eretz Yisrael is because we promised, we pledged that we would get rid of all the nichush, of all those practices of the non-Jews who were living there. So why is this something that we take so seriously? Why is it something, you know, nowadays we have people who say Toeva. You know, sometimes you have mitzvahs in the Torah that are branded by the name Toeva. And it's unusual that the Torah goes out of its way to say a Toeva. Someone who's Mechal Shabbos is not called a Toeva. There are some averis in the Torah that the Torah does describe as being a Toeva. We don't have to get into them. But this is one of them. This is one of them. You'll be surprised that the Torah here says that somebody who's involved in Nichush, somebody who's involved in this kind of avera, is involved in a Toeva. And why is it that the Torah goes so above and beyond and gets so carried away with the fact that somebody wants to be involved in something like this? What's the problem? What's so bad about that? So the Sefer HaChinuch gives us a perspective, and I think it's a very important one. The Sefer HaChinuch number Ches writes, Mishrashe HaMitzvah. What's behind this mitzvah of not being involved in Nichush? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, Lefi, She'en Yanim Eila, because these kinds of ways of life, Heim Divrei Shigon, V'sichlus Gemura. This is absolute silliness. It's illogical. It's nonsensical. There's nothing about it that makes sense. Ula'am Kadosh Amiti Asher Bachar Hakel, and to the Jewish people, who are the chosen people, Lo Yeyus Lahem She'yasu She'yishashu B'divrei Sheker. We have better things to be doing with our time. Why should a people who has such better things to be doing with their time be involved in such silliness, in such hevel havelim? Now the Sefer HaChinuch's words, I think, should carry over to many other things that we do as well. Nothing to do with Nichush. If we're such an exalted people, if God chose us to have a very important role in this world, why are we involved in Nichush and why are we involved in so many other things that are not really helping the world advance? Okay, but here, Sefer HaChinuch writes, that's reason number one, why Nichush is something that we should stay away from. But reason number two, which is so much more important, is because Shehem Siba Lahadiach Ha'adam Me'amunas Hashem U'mitarasa HaKadoshim. Because when you start getting caught up in these ideas and you think everything is a simon and everything is a reference and everything means something else, everything's symbolic, you forget that God is the one who runs the world. You forget that God is the one who makes your fate and who decides what your end is going to be and what the coming year is going to be. It has nothing to do with all the simanim, with all the name changes and with all the mekubalim. It has to do with God Himself. And that, says the Sefer HaChinuch, is why we don't believe in this. A person who gets too caught up in this is going to come to a complete denial and rejection of God's presence in his life. And that, says the Sefer HaChinuch, is so important to keep in mind. Sheyachshov, kol tovasav ra'asav, because a person will mistakenly think that all the good and all the bad that happens in one's life is all davar mikri, is all happenstance, it's all coincidental, it's all because I did this or I did that, I stepped over my child's legs. It's all different things. We have all kinds of ideas that we think are the reason why bad things happen, and that we forget that it's God Himself that is the one who is Hashkacha Me'ezboro. It's all because God has ultimate plan for all of us, and He's the one who decides. He's the one who's going to determine what our year is going to look like. That's the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. The Rambam writes it as well. The Rambam goes so above and beyond when he talks about this violation, and he says, somebody who's involved in divrei sheker v'chazav, somebody who's involved in all this silliness that has no meaning to it, that has no reference at all to the reality, the Rambam writes that hare elu einan elo min aksilim u'machasre hadas. You're somebody who's like a young child who has no understanding of life, who has no understanding of what anything is supposed to be. He says, einam divrei chachma elo tohu vavohu vahevel. The Rambam says, this is no chachma, there's no mind that's involved at all, there's no understanding, this is not scientific, there's nothing at all that makes sense about all these practices. And therefore, says the Rambam, we must stay very far away from this. I once read Rav Shalom Shvadron, who was the Magid of Yerushalayim, gave a hesped, he gave a eulogy when the Stipler passed away. The Stipler was one of the Gedolim of the previous generation. And Rav Shalom Shvadron started off his hesped and he said, why was the Stipler's life taken away? So, I don't know how do you answer such a question, but Rav Shalom Shvadron was comfortable and confident answering such a question. He said, you know why? Because people stopped believing in God, they started believing in the Stipler. And anybody that had a problem in Israel said, instead of davening, they said, we're going to go to the Stipler. And that's not what the religion is about. God said, I have to take him away. Because people are losing perspective. Now again, we would never say that on our own. But he said this in the presence of thousands of people and in the presence of Gedolei Yisrael, and nobody stopped him. Because they knew it was true. Because they knew it was true. People stopped believing in God, they started believing in the Stipler. And we know that it's true today as well. People don't believe that God is the one, in His infinite wisdom and His infinite kindness, is the one who gives us and provides us with every move, with every step of our lives. And that's a problem. And that's exactly what Rav Shalom Shvadron was bemoaning. And God sometimes has to react to that. Now somebody said last night, what do you have to lose? So let's say you don't believe in the Mekubalim. Let's say it's not your thing, but your spouse wants to, so you go along. What do I have to lose? What's the big deal? There is a big deal. Somebody pointed out to me that Rabbi Yashiv made a comment that it is a big deal. Because you look in Chumash, Rashi comments by the story of Rivka. When Rivka gets married, so her brother, who is a Rasha, and her father, who is a Rasha, give her a bracha before she goes off to get married. And what is the bracha? Achoseinu, Atayila Alfi Revava, which is a strange practice that we have, that's the bracha that we give to a chasan and kala at a wedding. That's the bracha that's supposed to be given. So many people ask, what are we supposed to say at the badekin? Right? Parents are supposed to bless their children, but many parents don't know what they're supposed to say. And the bracha that we're supposed to say is, Atayila Alfi Revava, you should have many children, you should have a healthy family, you should be able to successfully transmit all the mesorah that we stand for. That bracha stems from Rishayim, which is a very strange concept that we took their bracha, and that's what we give all of our children at their weddings. It's a very interesting concept, but that's what we do. Now the Rashi comments over there that the reason why she later on became an Akara, why did she go so many years without having children? Rashi says, because God didn't want anyone to say that it was because of the blessing of these Rishayim that she had a child. So God had to wait long enough that nobody in their right mind would think that it's still based on the blessings of Lavan and all the Rishonim that were there. God had to wipe that out of everybody's minds, wait years and years and years for her to have a child, in order that now it will be clear and obvious and evident to everyone that it's only because God decided to send it to you. Rabbi Yashiv pointed out, there is something to lose. You don't believe in it, you say, oh, what can I lose by going to this Mekubal and by doing this kind of crazy thing? You know what you can lose? You can lose the same thing that Rashi writes on Chumash. God can hold back something good that's supposed to happen to you because he doesn't want anyone to say the good only happened because of that person. Something to be aware of. Something to be aware of. The Chasam Sofer has an interesting comment in a tshuva when he talks about, I don't know if anyone's ever heard, but there's a practice that some have based on a Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, questionable practice that before you move into a new house, if you're the first person to ever live in a house that has just been built, some people take two chickens and they do like kaparas. They shech the chickens in the house, they let the blood spill all over the place, and there's a whole idea behind this. I'm not sure exactly what it is. So the Chasam Sofer rejects the practice, and he says that he's very heavily, strongly opposed to anybody who does such a thing. And the Chasam Sofer writes that you want to know why bad things are happening? Perhaps, he says, because you decided to build a house in Chutz Laretz. That's why bad things are happening. Who told you to spend so much money and build such a beautiful house in Chutz Laretz when you're not planning to be here for that long? You're building up Chutz Laretz. You're showing God, I don't care about Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to invest millions of dollars in my house in Chutz Laretz. And now, you want to know why bad things are happening? There's a good reason why bad things are happening. Says the Chasam Sofer, you want to do a good thing in your house? You want to make sure bad things don't happen? Get a minion together to have a tefillah. Get a bunch of women together to do a mitzvah together. Do something in the house that's meaningful, that's going to ensure God that this house is going to be a house that's full of chesed, that's full of tefillah, that's full of Yerushalayim, that's full of other things. Don't take the two chickens and shech them and think now everything's going to be fine. Prove to the Ribono Shel Olam, prove to God you want to have a nice house, prove to him you're going to do something good with that house that you built, and you're not just doing it because you care, you couldn't care less about Eretz Yisrael. That, says the Chasam Sofer, is more important to have that perspective than to think about all the chickens that are going to be shechted and all the open windows that you might have and all the attics that you may have closed off and all the different things that sometimes make people very, very nervous. So this is something I believe is very requires very careful attention, and it's something we have to be very, very concerned about in the practice that we have throughout the year. There is one practice that the Gemara gives which would seem to go very much against all of what we've been saying, and that is they had a practice in the times of the Gemara that when somebody was not sure about a difficult venture in life that they were about to go on, and in many different areas, the Gemara says they used to ask a young child, "Psok li psukecha." They would stop a young child in the street and they would ask him, "What pasuk are you learning in cheder today? What are they teaching you in school today?" And whatever the child said, they took that somehow as a siman min hashamayim that either they should or should not be involved in whatever they were not sure about. So the question is, that's clearly a violation of what the Gemara says. So why does the Gemara assume that that's okay? So the Rishonim explained, the Rishonim already asked the question, the Rishonim, the Ran, and others explained the reason why that's different is because the Torah is supposed to be kihu chayechem v'orechem echem. The Torah is supposed to be the guiding force in our lives. A person has a question, there's no greater place to look than in the Torah itself. That is what's supposed to guide every decision, that's supposed to inform everything that we do, and therefore we have the right to go ahead and ask a child what pasuk they're learning, to look in a chumash, and to figure out what is the right way to go, what is the right path to go on, because that's what the Torah was made for. Now some have taken that way out of context, and they've said, well, the same way that you're able to do that in the times of the Gemara, so now we're allowed to put a letter into the Sefer of the Rebbe, and we're going to look at what page it showed up on, and we're going to make a decision based on that. That's not really in line with what the Gemara tells us is okay. That's taking it a little bit further. My father always says over that we have a very close family friend who's a very staunch Lubavitcher, and the Lubavitchers have a practice that they, not saying right or wrong, I don't know, but the Lubavitchers have a practice that when they have a difficult issue, since the Rebbe, we believe, is no longer alive, they stick a letter into his igris, into his sefer of his various collection of letters, and they see what page it shows up on, and they decide based on the page that they should or should not do whatever they're doing. Now, we had a family friend who every year used to go to the bungalow colony right next to my parents, and they would have a house right near my parents, and one year they were deciding, I don't know if it was a money issue or whatever it was, should we go this summer or should we stay in Crown Heights? Should we go this summer, should we stay in Crown Heights? Back and forth. The problem was they didn't have the Rebbe, a copy of the Rebbe's book there, so they didn't know how they're going to figure out the answer. So she decided that she's going to take her cookbook and stick in the question and see what page it shows up on. So she sticks the letter into the cookbook, and the next day she opens it up, and lo and behold, it's on the same page that she put it in the night before, and that page was the blueberry pie. So she said, oh, it's a siman min hashamayim because I only make the blueberry pie in the country, so it must be that we should go, we shouldn't go, whatever. So this is a violation. Either it's like Rav Soloveitchik once said, Somebody asked him if it's mutter to do, what do you call that? When you have somebody who reads your mind, what? Not a fortune teller. A mentalist. So they asked Rav Soloveitchik once, are you allowed to have a mentalist? Can you do such a thing? He said, it's not usher because of nichush, it's usher because it's stupid. That's what he said. So there's an isser also to be stupid. So this is also something that has no significance at all. It doesn't mean anything. You put a letter in a cookbook and you see what page it ends up on that has no significance. If it makes you feel good, I don't know. But this is something that is not really what in line with what we believe in. The question is, in Chumash we find that Eliezer, Eved Avram, what does he do when he's going, when he's sending out on a venture to go and find a wife for Yitzchak, what does he do? He says, well, let's see what happens. He sets up an arbitrary simon and he decides, well, if this works out, then it means she's the right girl, and if not, it doesn't. So the Gemara has issue with that. The Gemara is not sure. The Rambam actually writes, Eliezer did wrong. Eliezer was not allowed to do that. And the Rambam writes that if we would do such a thing, we would get punished. We would get Malkus for doing that because it's not at all what we're allowed to do. It has no correspondence at all with any scientific method of figuring out who the right wife is supposed to be. And that's a direct violation of the Isra of Nichush. So that is something to be aware of, that the story with Eliezer Eved Avram is a very questionable story, exactly how we interpret and understand what he did and why that's different from the things that perhaps we do. So with all this in mind, we come back to the question of Rosh Hashanah. Wouldn't it seem to be a direct violation? This has nothing to do with reality at all. And before we get back to Rosh Hashanah, I just think it's important to mention also, the Gemara says, "Kol davar sheyesh bo mishum refua, ein bo mishum darkei ha'amori," which means when you have something that is scientifically proven that it works, that's not called violating the Isra of Nichush. So take for example, I know nothing about medicine. I've never read any medical journals. I don't know anything about how medicines work. So I go to a doctor, I'm not feeling well. He says, well, you should take a Tylenol. Take the Tylenol, all of a sudden I feel better. Is that Nichush? Well, to me it makes no sense. How could it be? A little pill is going to be able to make my whole body feel better? It doesn't make sense to me. Well, you're right, it doesn't make sense to me, but if I studied the medical knowledge and the research about it, it makes a lot of sense. So that's what the Gemara says. Anything that's been studied and anything that has a scientific method to it, even if you personally might not understand it, but there is an understanding that many logical, sensical people do understand. If you have enough knowledge of the background of what this pill is, you will understand why it is that the doctor tells you to take it. That doesn't fall under the category of nichush, yeah? So belief in a mazel is something we do believe in. We do believe that there is such a thing as a mazel. Sometimes people have bad mazel. The Gemara says, "Hakol tali b'mazel afilu sefer Torah shebehechel." The Gemara says even the most honorable of people have to have good mazel. This is something that we daven for, that we all need good mazel. The reason why mazel is a problem is because the Gemara also makes a comment that ein mazel Yisrael, that the Jewish people aren't subject to the mazelos. So how do we make sense out of that? On the one hand, we say people are born into a particular mazel. At the same time, we say that the Jewish people supersede the mazelos, and we can do better than the mazel has set out for us to have a year. Yeah?
I didn't mean mazel. I meant mazalot.
Yeah. That's what a mazel is. That's what the Gemara describes, the mazalot. It's the same word, that the mazalot that a person is born in affect very heavily what the trajectory of their life is going to be. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos, I don't remember exactly where, but the Gemara says that a person who's born under a certain mazel, I don't remember when, but the Gemara says they're going to have blood on their hands. So the Gemara says either the person's going to grow up to be, unfortunately, a murderer, or they're going to grow up to be a shochet or a moel or something. So we have a mazel that we're born with sometimes, but we can use that mazel for the positive or for the negative. There's nobody who's born in a mazel that doesn't have something that they can accomplish in life. And that's what the Gemara points out. It's up to us to figure out how to take that mazel and run with it in a direction that's a positive one. Yeah?
How about checking the mezuzahs?
So my father always points out that checking the mezuzahs is a very good idea, especially in Chodesh Elul. We're told that you're supposed to check the mezuzahs every so often just to make sure. But again, to keep in mind that checking the mezuzahs, you should bring it to a sofer, not to a mekubel. You bring it to somebody who understands what a mezuzah is supposed to look like. Not because you're afraid maybe something's wrong, but because you're afraid maybe I'm not performing the mitzvahs of Hashem the way I'm supposed to. That's why we check a mezuzah. Yeah?
How does Ayin Hara fit into all this?
Ayin Hara is a big, big question. It's a big debate whether or not we believe in Ayin Haras. Is it something that we should believe in, or is it something that we should not? It's a big discussion in the Rishonim. My father's approach to all this, and again, it's my father's opinion. He's a rationalist. That's the way he thinks about everything. He thinks everything has to make sense. And So, in my father's opinion, he goes along with what the Chazon Ish said. Chazon Ish was the undisputed Gadol Hador of the previous generation, died in the 1930s. The Chazon Ish said that if a person is not concerned about these things, then you don't have to be concerned. If a person lives their whole life being worried and always getting nervous about such things, so then maybe you have to be worried. But Chazon Ish said, if it's something that's not on your mind, if it's something you don't think about often, so it's something you shouldn't start thinking about. Just leave it as it is, and don't start worrying about such things. If a person grew up in a way that they do worry about such things, and again, I know a lot of Europeans who grew up with this and had a lot of interest in Ayin Haras and Mazalas and all these kinds of ideas, again, we shouldn't laugh them off. It's just a different way. It's a different way of thinking. So let me just come back to the point about Rosh Hashanah. So the question that is raised is, with all this in mind, how do we do the Simanim on Rosh Hashanah? Isn't that also a direct violation of the Isra of Nichush? So this is the question that everybody asks, and this is a question that has many different answers. Some say that, well, over here, the Gemara is describing that a person is trying to figure out, they're walking on the road, and all of a sudden the stick falls out of their hand, and they take it as a simon min hashamayim, that it means this and that. It means they interpret it to mean something, and they do an action based on their interpretation of something that took place, which doesn't at all correspond to reality. It's not scientific, it's not methodical, it's just something that they arbitrarily decided in their head makes sense. Over here in Rosh Hashanah, when we're doing this, we're not acting upon it. We're not doing anything. We're just saying this should be a good simon for us, that something good should happen this year. We're not changing the course of life based on anything that we do on Rosh Hashanah. And perhaps that's why the simanim are not an issue. That's one suggestion that's given. There are a number of suggestions, but my father always is fond of saying over the suggestion that perhaps the reason why we do it is as we started. For those who remember where we started with the Ramban, that the Ramban says the reason why sometimes we have to take an idea and put it into action is because that serves as a poel dimyon, that serves as somehow materializing, concretizing the thoughts of God and the thoughts of all of us at this time. We concretize all those feelings and we make it into an action. And that somehow locks God in, so to speak, to come through with that. So my father always points out that it's important that we remember that when we have the Simanim on Rosh Hashanah, it's not the act of the eating, it's not the act of having the pomegranate on the table, it's the tefillah that we offer along with those things. The tefillah is what's really significant. And this is why the Kaf HaChaim writes, let's say you have somebody who's allergic to rimonim, you have somebody who's allergic or doesn't like a head of a fish, doesn't like a head of a cow, I don't know, a lot of people don't like such things, and you don't want to eat it. So you shouldn't have Simanim on Rosh Hashanah. The Kaf HaChaim writes, yes, you should have Simanim on Rosh Hashanah, even if you can't eat it. Why? Because the ikar is, the most important part of what we do is the tefillah that we offer. This evokes our emotion, it gets us to think seriously about what we're doing, and I think it's important to keep in mind, if the tefillah is really the most important part, that's what our concentration is supposed to be on, that's what the focus really is, it's important that we keep in mind that we don't just mumble the tefillah. Sometimes we get all carried away with what we're eating and we forget to offer the tefillah, but the tefillah really is the most important part of what we do, because the tefillah is what we want that God should listen to, and that's what we're supposed to be concentrating on more so than anything else. So how do we properly make that tefillah? If the tefillah is so important, how do we properly make that tefillah and make sure that it really is going to have the greatest results for us? So this is a very significant point to be aware of, and that is that the Gemara says the following. Look at number 10, where the Gemara points out that there was someone by the name of Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. The Gemara says there was someone by the name of Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem who lived at the same time as Avraham Avinu, and God wanted to give Malki Tzedek wonderful blessings in his life. God wanted to really make him prosperous. God wanted to be motzi kahuna mishem. It says he wanted to give him great brachas. However, it was taken away from him. Why? Because he confronts Avraham Avinu. As we know the story in Bereishis, that Avraham Avinu fights the war of the four kings and the five kings. Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem is so impressed with Avraham Avinu, he comes over to him and he says, Vayivarcheihu vayomar. He comes to Avraham Avinu and he blesses him and he says, this is in the quotations, what does he say? Baruch Avram Lekel Elyon Konei Shamayim Va'aretz. Blessed is Avram Avinu. Look what he just off. Look what he was just successful in doing. And then, Baruch Kel Elyon. He adds on after that, not only is Avram blessed, but God himself is also blessed. And the Gemara says, because he was hikdim, birchas hedyot, the birchas kono, because you blessed a human being before taking time to bless God, therefore, everything was taken away from him. That's what the Gemara says. And this is a very important concept to be aware of. The Zohar HaKadosh writes, based on this Gemara, that when a person wants to give a bracha to somebody else, you first have to offer a bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is something important to keep in mind on Erev Yom Kippur, when many people give brachas to their children, the Acharonim write that you should first give a bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should say some sort of pasuk that highlights the fact that you appreciate the blessings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that you realize how much of a central focus he is in our lives, and only afterwards should you go ahead and give your children the bracha that we say on Erev Yom Kippur, the Sefer Hasidim writes, let's say you have somebody who gets a Besura Tova. Somebody comes to you and says, you know, you were busy in the office, you were doing whatever you were doing, but your wife just had a baby, or you just had a grandchild, or whatever it is. So your immediate knee-jerk reaction is to say Mazel Tov. But the Sefer Hasidim writes, that's the inappropriate reaction. The first thing you should do is, you should thank God for the wonderful thing that just happened to you. And you should appreciate and you should recognize the fact that He is the guiding force in your life. And after that, you should appreciate the human beings who are involved in the aspect of this wonderful thing that took place. And this is something that we should keep in mind on Rosh Hashanah night as well. We know that there's a practice that we have, and it's a very well-known practice, and it has very early sources, to say l'chaim when somebody takes a drink of wine or a drink of schnapps. Now, every Jewish practice has a very good source, and you just have to find out what the source is. But this has such rich meaning. Why do we say l'chaim? Anybody know? Why do we say l'chaim when somebody takes a drink of wine? What about when you take a nice cold drink of Coke? Why don't you say l'chaim then? So the Gemara says, the Gemara doesn't talk about it, but some suggest that it's based on the Gemara. The Gemara writes in Sanhedrin that when they used to have capital punishment that was administered to someone, so on the way out to kill this person, they knew the person was so anxious, the person was couldn't think straight. They knew they were about to have their last moments in life, so the Gemara says they used to get them drunk. They used to give them a lot of wine that they shouldn't have an understanding. They should lose their mind and not really realize what's about to happen. The Gemara says as well in Ksubas that when they had people who were unfortunately sitting Shiva, they would go ahead and bring them cups of wine, 10 cups of wine a day, it says. It's a nice practice, but it's not what we do today. But the Gemara says that they used to have wine was brought to the house, Lo Nivri Yayin Ela Lenachem Avelim. One of the main reasons why wine was created was to somehow appease the minds of those who are sitting Shiva, because it's such a difficult time, it's so hard for them to suffer the loss that they were going through, and therefore we give them wine to get their minds off of it a little bit. So we have the practice to say L'chaim because back in the days, wine was only used for negative things. For when somebody was losing their life in a Beis Din, or for when somebody was sitting Shiva or something of that nature, we used to use the wine to take their mind off the terrible time that they were going through. But nowadays, when we say L'chaim, we're trying to say, drink the cup of wine for good things, that you should have life, and you shouldn't have to drink the wine for the very negative reasons that the Gemara gives us that they used to drink the wine. Now, this is a very beautiful reason why we say L'chaim, and it just goes to show that every minig that we have developed over the years has a very good source and has a very good reason, and just if you spend enough time trying to understand it, you'll really have a greater appreciation of everything that we do. But there's a discussion in the Magen Avraham, when is L'chaim supposed to be said? So you have a cup of wine and you say a Bori Pi Hagafen. So do you say L'chaim first? Do you say L'chaim second? Do you say L'chaim third? What do you do? So you have to do three things. You have to, number one, make a bracha. You have to say L'chaim and you have to drink the wine. So what's the order? What should you do? So the Magen Avraham says you're not allowed to say L'chaim first because that's giving a bracha to a human being before giving a bracha to Hashem. So that's out of the question. So there were those who said you have to make the bracha first, and then you say l'chaim, and then you drink. But that's also out of the question because that's a hefsek. You're not allowed to make any disruption in between the bracha and drinking the wine. So what you have to do is, the real way to do it, says the Magen Avraham, is you say the bracha baruch pri hagafen, or shehakol nehi bedvaro, and then you take a little sip, then you wish each other l'chaim. Because you first, that's what the Gemara tells us, you first have to offer the bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and only afterward can you offer the bracha to another human being. And the same goes on Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, as we mentioned before, it's important to keep in mind that since many of the simanim that we eat are not part of the meal, it's just superimposed onto the meal, it's not a course in our meal, it's just something that we do special for Rosh Hashanah. So I want you to keep in mind that a special bracha has to be said on many of the items that we're going to serve, either a ha'etz or a ha'adama. You should keep in mind which fruits you're eating and what the order is, which bracha should be made on what. But you should also keep in mind that yihi ratzon that we say, which again is the highlight, that's what we're supposed to concentrate most of our attention on. So the right way to do it is you make the Bori Pi Ha'etz on the apple, or on the rimon, or whatever you're going to have. You eat a little bit of it, and after that you recite the Yehi Ratzon, because that's a blessing for human beings. You first have to make the bracha for Hashem, only afterward do you make the bracha for a human being. So this is something that we should be aware of, and it's something we should take very seriously. I think that when we come to a time of Rosh Hashanah, and it's a time that we are spending so much of our energy thinking about the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thinking about how central of a focus He is supposed to be, not only in our lives, but in the whole world's existence, it's certainly not a time to make the mistake and to have the simanim and to forget about God. That's what the Sefer HaChinuch writes, that the main problem of Nichush is that we forget about God. We forget that when something goes wrong, we're supposed to be praying to Him. We're not supposed to be running around and doing other things. And this is why on Rosh Hashanah, I think it's very, very critical that we keep in mind that although we do the simanim and although there's justification for it, we have to understand why it is that we do the simanim, and understand that it's the tefillah that's the main focus of all the simanim that we do, because the tefillah is ultimately our connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. on a day in which we accept upon ourselves his leadership and his involvement in our lives, it's a time for us certainly not to make the mistake and to brush him off and say that no, our life's fate is going to be in the rimon, or it's going to be in all the different items that we bring to the table. We know with a clarity that God is the one who's going to determine everything for the coming year, and it's only in the hands of God to decide what our lives are going to look like and what our trajectory is going to be going forward. I take the opportunity to wish everyone Ksiva v'chasima tova, and we look forward to seeing everyone again after Yom Tov.